You're listening to the Men Overseas Podcast, a show that explores methods and ideas to help you live a bigger life. You will hear interesting stories of how people live, how they save and invest their money, and why having time wealth is better than being a billionaire. If you are entertained, educated, or elevated, be sure to hit the subscribe button. We're just getting started. Now here is your host, Brad D'Antonio.
Ben, I don't know whether to call you Ben or Benjamin.
Either one. Most of my close friends call me Benji.
Well, welcome. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Benji. I am too. How does a man born and raised in Jackson, Mississippi end up in Prague?
Really just probably macro design of God for my life. My mother was born here in Prague, Czech Republic, and she ended up moving to America when she was 19, and I moved here full-time when I was 19 years old. So we did sort of flip-flop.
Whoa.
And yeah, she has a history here growing up under communism, but then also taking part in the revolution in 89.
Tell me more about that.
She was a student. So a couple years before she moved to America, I think it was probably around senior year, they started to have the demonstrations on the street here in Prague called Narodny, National Street. And students led it, of course, as they are usually the vanguard of all political mobilization around the world. And then a couple weeks later, the communism government fell here in Prague as the last satellite state. Communism had already fallen in Poland and Hungary, and Czechoslovakia was the last stronghold.
So what does she say about being raised under communism?
To be honest, I don't know if she's talked about it that much. It's more just the mindset. Definitely emphasis on freedom of speech, Second Amendment.
You're saying she has that now.
Yeah, after living in America. But, I mean, just that big emphasis on freedom and expressing yourself, freedom of press, and then just a lifestyle more so of being really thrifty and frugal and being grateful for having abundance in America under capitalism.
So she was 19. Why did she go to the States?
She helped Christians here, actually, after the fall of communism, missionaries doing some translation and camps for youth, and then got invited to a Bible school. And then after that finished, she was invited to stay with the family in Jackson, Mississippi, and start studying there at Belhaven University.
Belhaven. I have some listeners that have been to Belhaven.
Really?
They went to school there, yeah.
That's cool.
Isn't that kind of a prestigious school, like a Duke of Mississippi or something?
I wouldn't say so. There's Mississippi College, Belhaven.
Is it a JUCO, a junior college?
No, it's a private liberal arts university.
That's what I thought.
Maybe somewhat prestigious.
Okay, so she grew up under communism and she didn't have freedom of speech, didn't have the Second Amendment. Would you say your mom became more westernized moving to America, or do you think she had those beliefs before and just got reinforced by living in America?
Definitely probably reinforced a lot. And then I've seen, you know, changes in her because now she embraces a little more of consumerism and likes to, you know, update her wardrobe even though she doesn't need new shoes and clothes.
So she's not like frugal that. Anymore.
Not
after all this abundance.
Still frugal because she does thrift shopping. So all of it's mostly secondhand, but still it's just like too much, you know, a little bit of that materialism emphasis now.
And your dad is an arborist, correct?
Yes. So we started a tree service company 6 years ago, but his whole life he's working with his hands, taught himself carpentry, and together they saved money living with my father's parents. And then they did not take out a loan, but instead they bought land with family and then built their house in stages and never got into debt with a mortgage.
Wow.
In the country with a lake.
And are your parents the same age roughly?
Yes, sir. They are, I think, 1 or 2 years apart.
Okay. And what was he doing? Was he at Belhaven when they met?
He went to Asbury University in Kentucky. And then he just took one semester summer course at Belhaven and met mom in that one course.
Wow. He ever tell you about how that went down?
He did.
What did he say?
He did. That he noticed her and she was voted at the end of her studies like most friendly out of the whole university. So she had her strategy of speaking to everyone in the class so it wouldn't be too obvious that she was interested in him. But she was from the beginning. And he was a youth pastor that summer in Mississippi. So their first date outside of the class was when he invited her to come speak about Christianity under communism at his youth group.
Wow. He must have married her fast.
in like 6-7 months because she was moving back to Prague. Like, you know, her student visa was running out.
Yeah.
So he said, this is my last chance. I got to do it.
And he did it.
Good for him. Yeah, that Christmas proposed to her on Charles Bridge.
On the Charles Bridge.
And my brother did that too.
Wow. So you're going to do it.
That's the plan.
Good for you. And you want to marry a Prague gal, don't you?
Yeah. I think it makes more sense to marry an Eastern European.
Why?
Just because I'm really focused on being international mobile and I like the mindset. I really enjoy speaking different languages. And American women, they don't have those attributes.
Are there any other attributes lacking in American women that you find in Czech women?
Maybe a little bit more frugal and not Czech women, I'd say in the majority don't care so much about their style or brands, name brands. I think there's more emphasis on that in America.
Definitely not style. They're keen on style here.
Think so.
I think so. Yeah. I think you see 60-year-old women dressing with style here. That's what I've noticed going to work. Yeah. More so than in America.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. Okay. You're right. But more so the brands, I'd say. But yeah, it's definitely harder to find a Christian woman in the Czech Republic.
Can you say what you just said in Czech? It's hard to find a Christian woman.
Je to mnohem těžší najít tady křesťanskou ženu v Česku než v státech.
Yeah, wow. So you've been speaking Czech since you were little, right? You're fluent.
Yes, sir.
Wow. Any other languages?
Spanish, picked that up in high school and then kept that going. And then Polish. Lived there briefly in Warsaw and learned Polish before moving there.
Okay. So you said the possibility of marrying a Czech girl enthuses you. What about a Polish woman?
Yeah, I'm definitely open to that.
Yeah. Are they, compare and contrast Polish and Czech women?
Very similar. Polish people, I think, in more general, are slightly more friendly and definitely have a lot more Christian cultural influence on their mindset. A lot more secular here in the Czech Republic. But, I mean, they look pretty much the same, I'd say.
Do you find that just about every young woman says that she's spiritual and not Christian? Do you notice that a lot?
Yes.
I noticed that starting about 10 years ago. Do you know that as of 10 years ago, 88% of the Polish reported themselves to be Christian Catholic, and now it's 71%?
Wow.
That's a big drop off. Mm. So yeah, you're going to have trouble, man, if that's what you're looking for. Do you feel like if you had to set filters on a dating app, you have to have a Christian, right? Like you wouldn't marry. Would you even date somebody who wasn't Christian?
I've tried multiple times and now I'll say no.
Why not?
Because you're trying to change really too much. I mean, you're not trying to change a person because really only Jesus can change them. But trying to introduce them to Jesus, explain the gospel when people are usually set in their ways is very difficult and sort of a waste of time in the end. And then you can also, of course, slip into temptation and they can influence you in ways that might not be positive. So it's risky. It's time consuming. And yeah.
Well said. How do you end up in Prague? You're from Jackson.
Yeah. So after high school graduation 2018, the plan was to go straight to the Naval Academy, which I did. Got an appointment nomination and went right into plebe summer basic training, 18 years old. So the plan was to become a pilot, do military service, and then one day become a U.S. diplomat. But there I got sick very badly. Inflammation in my colon, my digestion system was messed up and was eventually hospitalized and diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And based on that, they told me immediately, oh, you're not going to be able to continue in the military anymore just with this diagnosis. So that really shattered my dreams in an instant. And I was struggling with the illness for a whole year. And I came to visit my Czech family basically the next summer. So 12 months after this, was in the hospital for the fifth time here in the Czech Republic. The doctors were saying the same thing. I'm going to have surgery. I was on 3 heavy medications. But once they released me from the hospital this fifth time here in Prague, I drastically just started to improve and ended up staying here. Had a return ticket, didn't fly back to Mississippi, but stayed and started studying about 3 months later at a American International University here in Prague. International relations is what I studied. So it was really just God's design through a very hard challenge in my life of faith and health, of course.
Mm-hmm. So ulcerative colitis, you're out, like you can't do anything within the military?
That's what they said. I mean, I'm healed. Don't have any problems. Thank you, Jesus, for that. But it's still on paper that I have it, and it is chronic. So people say it can come back and be triggered by things. So that's why they told me I can never return back to the service, unless I want to try to do all these appeals, but I'm not going to do that.
And now you are doing what?
Right now, studying finance. That's something I would like to do. And in the meantime, I picked up a job here in Prague as a teacher. So teaching at a private school, English, of course, but also global politics and history of the Cold War, a little bit of geography. So my parents are happy that I'm teaching. So mom is a teacher. She has been her whole life. And my father taught art the first couple of years out of college. So teaching for a year, we'll see how long I stay in it. But the plan would be later to work in finance of some type and then maybe go into diplomacy again.
Well, I want to talk to you about that. But before we do, you're the reason that we went and put flowers on the memorial of Irina Zarutska and Charlie Kirk in Wenceslas Square here. How did you learn that there was a memorial there?
I went to a CrossFit workout and just happened to walk through that area of Prague, the main square in front of the museum, and saw it.
And you crossed in front of the horse? Because there's a lot of construction down there. They're building rails for trams, I think.
If that construction was not there, I probably would not have seen it. It made me go around the statue and I saw the memorial and instantly knew I had to, you know, honor them.
Interesting. Yeah, so it was your idea to place flowers. Did you know I've posted that video on Instagram? Guess how many views it has?
I don't know how many followers you have, but...
Not many.
5,000?
500,000.
Wow.
Yeah, that's like a virality, I think. I don't know that what constitutes virality, but yeah. For a little old me, I couldn't believe how much that took off around the world.
You know the Hodge twins?
Yeah.
They posted it. A photo of the statue. So I wonder if they saw it from you or someone
maybe.
Else.
Maybe. They'd give me no cred, and then yeah. I'd have to give you cred.
But they posted it, the picture of the statue and the photos there.
So how did you learn about that, and did you see the video?
I woke up Friday morning, I think, and in a group chat with friends from high school, they were talking all about it. And I was like, what? There's no way. And then when I opened social media, it was everywhere there. So I was in shock, and I did not watch the videos. I saw the edited one, of course, with Irina in the train, but with Charlie, I saw the one just from a distance where he gets hit, but have not watched the ones up close and don't want to based on what friends have told me that they've had trouble sleeping, you know.
I'm one of them. New friend, trouble sleeping.
Exactly. Yeah. I believe it.
How did it impact you?
I spoke to it about my students in global politics, and we spoke about Irina first, about how it shows a decline in humanity based on the inaction of the bystanders, just racial targeting as well. So racism is still there. The failure of our legal system, judicial system, that he was still out in the streets. And, you know, the irony that she left a war-torn country and then can't travel publicly to and from places where she needs to go, that she gets killed after leaving Ukraine. So we talked about those things, and it just set hard upon me. There's still so much evil, definitely awakening in that sense. And then with Charlie Kirk, the overall impact it has on conservatives and Christians to stand up for their faith and to be more bold speaking even on political issues. I think that's definitely positive for it. It's going to backfire, and it already is backfiring on the assassins' actual intentions to silence Christian conservative voices. But then it's sad that we see people celebrating, of course, and how it shows that people tolerate political violence against opinions that they don't agree with. That America has really, you know, sunken this low in the last decade or two.
So what level are you teaching at a university?
High school. Gymnasium.
Do you ever think that you might be, that students might think you're biased in the way that you talk about it? Just as an example, you brought race into it.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. But do you, I mean, if you had some uber leftist Marxist types in the class, they would think that you're being racist for bringing up race. Of course, right? If the races were reversed, it'd be racism, obviously. But you calling it racism, in the case of Irina Zarutska, do you ever think, oh, they're going to think that I'm biased in the way that I'm portraying this?
I actually was just thinking about this week, because when I was a university student, I was, of course, scared a lot of times to speak out because I knew my professors were left-leaning. So I held my tongue on a lot of things. And here in the classroom, I'm not. We have four in the global politics class, so it's quite intimate. And I try to present it objectively, just state facts. But for us to have productive discussions, your opinions and biases are always going to come into any discussion on any political issue. So I have a plan to, you know, tell them that they don't have to fear any backlash from me, any subjective grading on their assignments by expressing their political views, because we have to be honest and authentic with each other in the classroom if we're going to learn. And of course, if we're going to have those civil dialogues that Charlie Kirk so adamantly advocated for.
And now you're teaching a class on the Cold War, correct?
Yes, sir.
Was this going on, assassinations during the Cold War?
In 1948, when the communists took over in January, 3 months later, the president, the president's son, Tomasz Masaryk, he was thrown out a window of the palace. And people were saying it was suicide at the time, but there's evidence.
Prague.
Yeah, here in Prague, there's a little plaque by the palace. It's now the palace, the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs now has its headquarters there. So there was political intimidation leading up to the communist takeover. And then after they took over, mysterious circumstances surrounding his suicide, but it was most likely a murder.
Why the interest for you in the Cold War?
Cold War is fresh history and it's still impacting the world today. A lot of people, my professor at LLC spoke about how the conflict in Ukraine is really just a continuation of the Cold War and people not understanding the Soviet mindset that is still in Putin and leadership around him. So the Cold War is vital to understand relations today. And then all the themes concerning how you suppress political opposition, how polarization can lead to stability if you have a balance of power, etc. You can learn these lessons today and have a better understanding of global politics through the Cold War. And it's really interesting because you had two superpowers and there was no conflict between them directly. But then we had proxy wars, and how you can learn through those proxy wars and how Ukraine could still be a continuation of proxy wars between the two superpowers.
Yeah, it's hardly cold when there are proxy wars, right?
Yep.
It kind of makes it hot.
It does.
Man, what was the impact on the smaller countries? Because I just came from Estonia, and Poland is relatively larger, but compared to the U.S. or China, we're talking about small countries. So how were they affected during the Cold War, like the small bloc countries that were between blocs, let's say?
Yes. So the three Baltic states you mentioned, they were part of the Soviet Union. And the independent states that were part of the Soviet bloc, through interference and intimidation, they fell into the Soviet sphere of influence, would be, you know, Poland, Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and Romania as well. What was your question?
There must have been a lot of people that were trying to appeal to the West, and then those that were trying to appeal to the communists. And like, how did they, like, all, you've been to a lot of those countries, right? Macedonia, Albania, all of those, Bosnia.
Yes.
Former Yugoslavia. What was that like during that time?
So I'll speak on the Czechoslovakia mainly, mm-hmm. But if you put yourself in their shoes at the time, there was a lot of structural factors that influence the rise of communism among the people. After the war, they had free elections in Czechoslovakia, and this communist got 38% of the vote. Free elections. So it was the highest here in Czechoslovakia.
And what year are we talking about? Sorry.
1946.
Okay.
So right after the war. And if you think before the war, there was the Munich Agreement. So in the minds of Czechoslovaks, they saw the West as the betrayer.
Mm.
Because they gave up their borderland and they had no chance of defending against the Nazis, even though they had a sizable army. So the Czechs would have fought if they had, you know, the borderland, but the West betrayed them. And this was in their mindset all throughout the war. And a lot of the partisan fighters were communist sympathizers. And then after the communists came in, they freed the people from the Nazis for most of the territory of Czechoslovakia. The Americans reached Plzeň, one city, but the communists were seen as the Vysvoboditelas, the people that set them free. So they came in with this popularity, and that's why they got the highest percentage of the vote in Czechoslovakia. But then they got ministers into the Ministry of Interior, into the police. They had militias, and they used intimidation factors through the police force so they could suppress political opponents, threaten them, form massive demonstrations. And the Czech president at the time really wanted to hold down peace. And they also sow division among other political parties. As we see a lot, division allows the alternative to appear stronger. And they infiltrated these parties as well with communist sympathizers who were not communist under name. So like, you know, Rhino. So they put sympathizers in different political parties, and these sympathizers either made chaos or they, you know, created discredibility for those different political parties. So they had the structural factors I'm talking about is before the war, how Czechoslovaks viewed the West, and they sympathized with communists for setting them free. And then how they used tactics on a micro level by intimidation through the police state, the police force, and then sowing division among other political parties, infiltrating them. And then even with the Socialist Democrat Party, they put communists in this party and eventually merged with the communists to form a coalition. So that's, I know that's a lot of words.
Well, I'm curious if you think there was an attempted communist takeover of America in the last, say, 5 years.
Good question. Let me think a second. Short answer, gut feeling is yes, based on a lot of the principles, specifically economic principles that Democrats were standing for. I'd say yes.
What do you think prevented the Cold War from turning into a full-scale military conflict worldwide?
Mutual destruction.
You made the mad thing.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't a Soviet engineer or something get word that America was sending nuclear? Wasn't there like a nuclear siren that went off? Or no, he prevented the siren from going off or retaliating, right? Because he thought it was a false alarm, and it turned out to be.
I've heard of this, but I can't speak on it in detail.
No.
Continue.
All right. The other day when we had lunch on Friday, we had a Czech menu, so I couldn't read it, and you thankfully interpreted it for us, and you ordered a beer. And what's interesting about that is I knew you were a strong Christian going in, but then I thought just about every Christian I know drinks beer.
And really?
Czech, yeah. And well, I'm from South Louisiana, dude, so yeah.
Not Mississippi.
No, really? They don't drink there.
Christians most would say not really, no.
Is it something about, isn't this the beer capital of the world?
It is. The alcohol capital, they consume the most alcohol per capita.
Why is that?
Well, beer is really cheap. It's a secular society, and the culture tolerates alcohol, and frankly, probably alcoholism, drunkenness too, tolerates it quite leniently.
So have you always liked beer? Or, like, why are you drinking if it's, it seems to be opposed to your Christian
Yeah, I didn't grow up drinking at all. My parents did not drink as well. My father didn't have a sip of alcohol. He was 30 here in the Czech Republic. It was a funny story that he was traveling through a village and the grandma, he helped her grandma in her garden. And then she invited him in her home, opened a bottle of wine in his honor. So he could not reject it at that point. But for me, it was culturally trying to fit in, you know, at university and the taste as well. And I knew that it was biblical to drink alcohol, just not to abuse that moderation, to not get drunk, to maintain your sober-mindedness so you can withstand temptation. So, yeah, maybe just biblical understanding and not being influenced by the way I was brought up in Mississippi, but embracing more of the Czech culture here. And it really allows you to connect to Czech people and people in general.
I could see that. One thing I'm curious about is watching the propaganda wave that swept over America, was there a lot of propaganda during the communist era that was later exposed to be propaganda and maybe people didn't realize it at the time?
There was propaganda. Czech school teachers, most of them were in the Communist Party to maintain positions in education and government, etc. To get promotions, you had to be a member. But I can't speak out about specific, you know, pamphlets or something that I recall at this moment. But if you look up on the internet, you'll see all those really visualistic pamphlets and posters that the communists put up that were talking bad about the West.
What are your favorite museums and places to visit to learn more about the history of Prague and Czech Republic? Or even the Cold War?
I'd say for Cold War, I visit a lot of museums in Warsaw because I moved there. Here in Prague, I've been here so long, I don't go to museums often. But there's the National Museum here, the Communism Museum. In Warsaw, the most impactful museum was the Museum of the Warsaw Uprising.
I went. It's awesome.
It's awesome. It's massive. And it's really, really sad because the Soviets stood on one side of the river and they just really watched all the Poles uprise against the Nazis and get cut down after months of fighting, and the whole city was obliterated and leveled to the ground, really. So that's one of my favorite in Warsaw. Then in Gdansk, there's a really good World War II museum that really shows the history of the Polish Jews that were killed, exterminated, and that's very eye-opening as well. And in that museum, I learned that the Poles were the ones who had the highest per capita death rate out of any country, even more than Russia. If I remember correctly, it was like 16-18% of the Polish population died in the war. It was lower in Russia, mainly because of all the civilians that got killed and the Jews.
Wow. Yeah, I've been to those museums, and Warsaw was 90%, more than 90% was obliterated of like the old town. And then Gdansk was the same. And they're both beautiful to walk through, but it's not the, it wasn't the same as Krakow, which, you know, the buildings have been there 500 years and it's a different feel, but they're all so beautiful. Polish architecture is just beautiful. And it's beautiful here too. It's beautiful all over the Eastern Europe. I wish America could do some of this. It's really awesome.
Yep, I feel that.
When we were having lunch the other day and you said to me, tell me about your portfolio. I remember thinking, oh, it's not very often I get to share my finances with somebody who's a recent graduate of the prestigious London School of Economics. So when I shared my portfolio, what were your thoughts?
I like the real estate emphasis and that you hold for long term. So I did have a question concerning this, whether you think it's better to be a completely passive investor or you think you can get better than average returns by being active?
No, I don't. You know, I think it's a very rare exception. And I might have some of that skill set that it takes to be in that small percentage. At least it's been proven out for 20 plus years. But yeah. I can't tell you that in a down market, I would do any better than anybody else. So,
yeah, I was just really surprised you don't have any gold or silver.
I don't. And I know you're a gold mining stock sort of investor. I know that, what is it up? I think it's up exactly the same amount, including dividends, as the S&P 500 the last 10 years.
Yeah.
So
even beat it the even last beat recent it. Years. Yeah. Just holding physical gold.
Wow. So what, tell me your portfolio. Like, how do you think about investing? As a, you're 26, correct?
About to be 26 in November. So 25 now. But I started really with my father. He had some gold and silver he bought in the early 2000s. So that's had good returns for him. And then I started collecting silver physically when I was in high school still, around 15, 16. Still holding on to that.
And when you say physically, what do you mean?
Coins.
In a safe?
Yes, in a safe. And then from there, when I graduated, put some money in index funds and have a little bit of real estate as well for passive income, and now doing a slightly active trading of these gold mining indexes because I know it's in a bull market and just wait for a pullback and sell and pull profits along the way. So definitely precious metals is my foundation. I have a lot, probably more than half the portfolio in that. And then I have a classic car that I consider investment because I don't drive it.
What is it?
It's a 1982 Corvette Collector's Edition.
Badass.
Yes. So I count that as an investment as well. But yes, a little. So funds, gold, silver, little trading, real estate. Like to be diversified.
Did your experience at LSE, did that change how you approached investing?
Really, no. Not at all.
What were your biggest takeaways from attending that school?
I had really good conversations with people who already worked in investment banking and worked in governments. They were from all around the world, so it was good to hear their experiences. And then there I was influenced to look into management consulting, and the Career Center helped me prepare for interviews with top three management consulting firms that helped me get an offer with Bain & Company in Warsaw. So that's why I was living there.
What are the other two?
McKinsey and Boston Consulting Group. So I was applying for these type of companies, and the environment there influenced me to do that because you're going to be in a really stressful environment. You're going to have to adapt. You're going to learn about business, different industries as well. And you're going to have to be really analytical and a good communicator. So that's why I wanted to go in these companies. Other than that, the connections at LSE, the Career Center preparation, I had, like I mentioned, the professor who spoke about post-Soviet conflict. I learned a lot in that course. And then in another course outside my program, I learned a lot about international finance and currency regimes and how they function. But I studied there my master's in international political economy.
So working at Bain, what was that like? In Warsaw, you said, right?
Bain, Warsaw. The office was like 96% Polish people. So I was hearing Polish all day, and I was trying to work in Polish, a little bit in English. So that was difficult, learning the language in that environment. A lot of sleepless nights. Why? I thought they were exaggerating.
Why were they sleepless?
Because sometimes you'd end in the office when you were on a project at midnight, 2 a.m., possibly 2:30, and they expect you to be in the office again at 9 the next morning. So you don't have time to do anything really 4 days a week. Sometimes on Friday, you're going to get off early at 10 p.m., but it really impacted your life. And the people who are, you know, managing me or the senior consultants, they are working on the weekends too. So that was not fun. And it was harsh there because I was put in a position I should have not been, and they didn't extend my contract after the probation period. And I was asking them before starting there, what can I do to prepare for this? I don't have any experience in business. I've never worked in a corporation, but they said, we'll teach you here. So there's sort of a paradox there where they know you're going to be learning on the job, but they also expect you to perform. And
that's hard.
That's hard to do both.
So you didn't want to go back into management consulting?
Not at this point in life. I'm trying to have a more balanced life. And I realized, okay, they pay you a salary that's twice the average salary. But if you're working twice the hours, it equals out to one, right? And then you have no free time, no social life outside of work.
What were the others like? Were they very ambitious? Were they doing it for a paycheck or trying to build a resume? And what was their character like?
Definitely, I can't even say workaholics, because I know workaholics, but these were extreme workaholics where it was like their god, their idol, I think, was the work, their career, getting a title, a fat salary, etc. So it's just everything they would focus on, because you have to sacrifice everything else in your life, your relationships, you know, even working out, so you can't maintain a physical peak fitness, etc. You have to sacrifice it.
So do these people, does that go on for, say, 2 or 3 years and then it relaxes a little bit?
Yes, morale was low when I left, and a lot of people, you know, rotate. So the turnover is high. Most people think they're going to go in for 2 years, put on the resume, learn a lot, and then they'll go to a more sustainable job. The company policy is up or out.
All right, let's do fun questions, because that usually leads to some good discussion.
Okay.
What brings you the most joy?
Most joy? Probably having really fruitful conversations about difficulties people are going through and how Jesus and faith can help them in those situations, and introducing people to Jesus.
Did you go to church on Sunday?
I did.
Which one?
Actually, International Church here, Destiny in Prague.
That's the one my wife goes to.
Yes.
That's how we met. I should probably tell listeners.
We met really like accidentally. I think it was divine.
At an ice cream shop.
Yeah, and I don't eat ice cream.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Huh. So why Destiny? And like, how do you decide to go to a different church than usual?
I try to go to Czech church so I can have Czech Christian friends and get involved in the community here. But sometimes go to international church because I have friends who go there. But really, you know, church needs to have people that are focused on Christ above everything else and believe the word of God to be true and take their you know, instructions for life from the Bible solely.
We met two girls when you prayed for us, or you prayed over Charlie Kirk and Irina at the little shrine they had there to them. And there were two girls there that you recognized, and you had just explained to me that you hope to get married soon. And one of the girls, Andrea, she seemed cute. She had a good personality. And I said, man, why don't you go for her? And what'd you say?
I said, my best friend here in the Czech Republic, who even lived with me, that was his ex-girlfriend.
So that was funny. That?
And I've been told by the bros, you know, never date your friend's ex.
Yeah, don't do it, bro. No way. So
that was funny. I ran into her my second time in person there.
At Destiny?
No, with you at the memorial.
Oh, where was the first?
At church with my best friend. He introduced me to her.
Mm.
Yeah.
And she's what, 26? You're 25? Yeah. You like older women or younger women? These are fun questions.
It is a fun trend. I'm trying to go, I think, for a couple years younger. That's better. But the past trend has been I've been dating older.
I could see that. I was your age. I dated quite a few older women, too. There's a maturity level, right? Is that why you tend to connect with older women?
Probably so. Yeah.
Well, you know, I have single listeners, so I'm letting people know that you're available. Because I love to see young people getting married and starting families. And, you know, a lot of people think that depopulation is our greatest concern in America. Other people say it's fentanyl in China. What would you say is the biggest concern of residents here in Prague, would you say?
The biggest concern of Czech people?
Yeah. Is it immigration? Is it drugs, murder, becoming westernized?
They embrace the West. So I'd say the biggest concern, biggest fear is probably Russia, the war in Ukraine, how it would impact them if Ukraine fell. And then second, probably Czech identity immigration. They're really a little bit hostile at times with foreigners. Czech Republic is objectively the most racist country in Europe, according to Harvard's implicit bias tests.
Interesting.
So that's one thing.
And who are they racist against typically?
Mostly people from the Middle East, Islamic countries, and then Africa as well. So like third world, really. They have a, to some extent, accepted Vietnamese culture here. There's a lot of Vietnamese here. So that's the other race that's here in the Czech Republic since the time of communism, once they had exchanges and people started moving here.
When's the last time you've driven a car?
In the summer, I was back in the States.
Is that weird?
Yeah, here, don't drive a car hardly ever.
Don't need one, right?
No, sir.
All right, if I gave you $100,000 and said you had to invest it in one gold mining stock, what would it be?
I haven't done a lot of individual analysis of companies, but one I've been holding for years now is B2G.
B2G.
Mm-hmm. BTG, I think that's a ticker, Canadian company. So they're solid.
BTG.
Yep.
Okay. What about a tech stock? If I said $100,000, here you go. Just put it in one tech stock.
Probably something with AI, to be honest. I've been listening a lot to people who are talking that AI is in a massive bubble right now, but then others are saying it's not in a bubble and that the application, the practical application of AI is now just getting started and that robots are going to be taking jobs, you know, for the next decade and AI is going to be needed and it's just going to expand more and more.
Do you think not wanting something is just as good as having it?
Not wanting something is just as good as having it. I'm having a hard time comprehending this.
You're not the only one.
Not wanting it. So I don't want war. Not the same as not having war. No, not wanting something expresses a desire not to have it, but not having it is just the absence of something.
Is that your final answer?
That's my final answer.
It's interesting that your first thought was war, of all things. That's interesting. Do you think your answer has something to do with the fact that you study the Cold War and maybe what just happened with Charlie Kirk?
Yes, and I mentioned, you know, the Ukraine war and how it really is in the mind of all Czech citizens.
What are they afraid of?
They really think if Ukraine falls, Russia's going to keep expanding. Mm-hmm. But from a realist perspective, it's not probable because there's NATO, right? And Ukraine is considered a part of Russia, partly, historically. So they have, you know, specific stakes there that they don't have in Poland anymore because they're Polish people. There's no Russians in Poland, or not a substantial amount. And then there's NATO. So Russia does not want a war with NATO, and they'd probably lose. See how they're struggling. Or it'd be a nuclear war.
What's the coolest thing anybody's ever done for you?
I mean, definitely just serving me, supporting me. My grandmother, you know, she helps really support me here in Prague with administrative things, with Czech bureaucracy, cleaning, cooking. That saves so much time and helps me focus on my studies and my lesson plans. So shout out to my parents for that as well. People who take time, like yourself, really, just to listen to me, to teach me. I have a lot of mentors in my life who talk about spiritual things, how I can improve, you know, about finance. So really just anyone who sees potential in me and takes the time to invest in me.
What's the best quality a girlfriend could have?
Probably wisdom, fear of God.
Where do you hope to be in, say, 5 to 7 years?
That's really hard right now because I'm about to apply for U.S. Department of State because Trump administration is reopened after shutting down job application openings for diplomats. So I'm going to apply and see where that goes. Then I could be working in a real estate investment firm here in the Czech Republic, but definitely probably still here in Prague if I'm not a diplomat for the States. Hopefully with wife, possibly a kid.
Or two. 7 years, you can make a couple.
Yes, sir.
What's the most important thing you've ever learned from your dad?
Probably to be merciful, because he really goes out of his way in a way like the Good Samaritan to help people who are getting off of addiction, introducing them to Christ, but then going out of his way so much, spending so much money and time, and when they mess up, giving them chance after chance. So just really mercy and grace for people who don't deserve it, and having patience through it all for people who really like screw him over sometimes. So really just how he is willing to give people chances and really try to help people and love them like Christ loved people when he was here walking around on earth.
Do you have a favorite Bible verse?
Mm-hmm. Right now it's Lamentations 3:25-26. The Lord is good to those who wait for him, to the soul who seeks him. It is good to patiently wait for the salvation of the Lord.
Let's play word association. I'll give you a word or name, and you give me the first thing that comes to mind.
Uh-oh.
All right? It'll be fun. Nintendo.
Sony.
They
made it, right?
I like that. Because you're so young. It's interesting. Jesus Christ.
Love.
$100 bill.
Benjamin Franklin.
2,000 coronas.
$100.
Yeah.
The conversion.
Internet pornography.
Oh, destruction.
Melania Trump.
Class.
Vaclav Havel.
Legacy.
Kobe Bryant.
Jump shot.
New York City.
Probably Statue of Liberty.
New Orleans.
Cajun.
Did you go there a lot when you were young?
Several times. Went there this summer, actually, with a Czech girl that came to visit me.
Oh, you had a Czech girl come to visit you.
She was my plus one date to my brother's wedding. So it was the first time going around New Orleans by myself and like showing her the city.
Did she like it?
She loved it.
She like you?
Yes.
She live here? Or?
Yeah, she lives in Prague. Crazy that we now brought her up because I saw her yesterday on the bus just randomly.
What? That means something.
We live close to each other, so.
a dating prospect or no?
We dated, but it didn't work out because she wasn't Christian. She was open to it. But yeah.
Open to Christianity?
Yeah, open to Christianity. Read the book More Than a Carpenter. Went to church with me, but decided, you know, she didn't want to follow Jesus.
How many dates or how many minutes into a date or that first one do you bring up Christianity and it's a qualifier? or disqualifier?
I think it's naturally going to somehow come up in any first interaction if it's more than an hour because, you know, I mentioned, you know, what do you do on the weekends? Well, if you mentioned church. Or just talking about what's the purpose of life? And if they ask you that question, you know, I do mention something about God. So it's not a complete disqualifier for like a friendship to form. But then, you know, to a certain extent, you can't get super close to someone if they don't have the same mission as you, the same view of God as you, and the same view of loving others as you.
Okay, let me give you a few more. Rainbow. First thing comes to mind.
It was like LGBTQ plus and then Noah as well.
Noah? What's that?
The story from the Bible, Noah.
Oh, Noah.
So it was like both of them. It was like this dichotomy flashed in my mind.
We've got a nephew named Noah.
Nice.
Have you ever heard of Fun Dip?
Fun Dip?
Yeah.
No.
What about Nerds?
The candy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I have.
What about Pez?
No.
No? How old were you when you got the internet? When you remember seeing it for the first time?
Shoot. Probably around 10? Yeah. Probably at some point, yeah.
What was it? Was it cool or was it just like...
I don't know. It was probably... Life? If you count internet like video games playing live, that... Mm. If not, it was probably reading something, maybe some online game as well. Yeah, online games. Yeah, a couple of those.
Are you still a gamer?
Somewhat, but got to cut it out now for more important things.
Oh, but, interesting.
Yeah, I do like in strategy games and then occasionally play with some friends from high school back home. Mm. But not here in Prague. When I'm in Europe, it's like focus on the grind.
Which social media app are you on the most?
Instagram, LinkedIn, occasionally Facebook for the boomers.
For the boomers like me. Yeah. I'm not a boomer, but I'm on there.
Those three mainly. Snapchat as well, just that's more of a daily thing with some close friends.
That's funny. To keep up with different age groups, you got to get on different apps now.
Yeah, exactly.
Are you on the dating apps?
No, tried that briefly. I did go on one Tinder date in my life in Mississippi, and then in Warsaw went on one Bumble date in my life. So after that, I mean, no, not on any. Don't want to right now.
You ever give any thought to assuming your dad's business when he's ready to retire? Because that's a great business to be in.
It is. My brother has expressed interest, and I really hope he would take it over. I just hope I get, you know, some shareholder stake in it because I put in the work in the early years and did all the marketing.
You say that with a smile. Would you be disappointed if you were given no stake?
No, it's all right. God's given me a lot more than I need, and I'll be well off.
What's your favorite Czech food to eat?
Czech food, I really like any of the dumpling dishes with the sauces, any of them really, and sauerkraut.
What did you order for us at lunch on Friday? What was that?
That was interesting. It was roleto vepřový, so like pork rolled up meat, and they had some berries inside, and then mashed potatoes.
Mm. But it was good, yeah. If you were a contestant on Jeopardy and you could choose the final category, what would it be?
Probably something related to history. Some history I know the best, probably World War II history.
World War II history?
Mm-hmm, or Civil War history. I really studied a lot of Civil War when I was younger, and then... Oh, political economy as well. Yeah.
Have you heard of Norman Ohler?
Norman Ohler? No.
Yeah, he wrote the book Blitzed about the Nazis being on meth when they did Blitzkrieg.
I've heard about this.
And even when they did Blitzkrieg in Poland, I guess they called it Blitzkrieg then too.
I also heard the Taliban were taking drugs when they were fighting Americans.
Mm. I believe it. Yeah, he's really interesting. Since you said World War II, if I asked you who Norman Ohler was, you would have not gotten that right. I didn't discover him until he was on Joe Rogan, and I've read Tripped and Blitzed. He wrote two books, and they're excellent.
Okay, he's a historian then. So I might have heard that name.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I think his first book was in 2015, and he was basically going into the archives and finding things that had never been reported on. How did we not know that the Nazis were up for 72 hours straight, hopped up on meth? It seems like that's something we would have known.
Mm-hmm.
But you learn something new. Do you have a favorite historical site as it pertains to World War II? Like, have you visited Normandy or anything?
I have not visited Normandy.
No.
Sadly. There's Auschwitz and places in Poland.
Did you go to the World War II Museum in New Orleans? It's really good.
In New Orleans? I think I went to one in Pensacola, but not in New Orleans.
Did your dad talk about the war when you were young?
Which war?
No, any wars.
No, he wasn't in the service.
I'm interested that you're interested because you're so young. I have trouble finding people my age who have half the obsession I have with all this history of war and how history is repeating or rhyming now and how people don't put two and two together. And I don't know if it's because they've taken no interest in the past or...
I'd say that's the main driver.
Yeah. So the students that you have, are they passionate about learning about all this history of war?
The ones I have for these two subjects, they've chosen it. It's with the International Baccalaureate Cambridge curriculum, and they chose it. So they hope they like it because we're going to be talking about it a lot.
What advice would you give to young men coming out of college right now based on your experience?
Think long term. And you're investing in your relationships and the time you spend in different areas. And then cultivate a intimate relationship with Jesus Christ every day. Just read a little bit and pray and remain in his will, because that's the foundation for everything else that's built upon it. Those two things.
I saw where a lot of people in America went to church for the first time on Sunday because of all the Charlie Kirk stuff.
Yep.
Did you see anything about that happening here too?
Church is full for me. I know here in the National Cathedral in the castle, there was a mass yesterday for Charlie Kirk. Wow. So the Bishop of Prague led a mass and it was completely full of people of Czechs.
Nice. Did they talk about Charlie Kirk at your service on Sunday?
Yes. The preacher mentioned it at the beginning and compared him dying to Jan Hus being a martyr here for... He stood up to the Catholic Church before Martin Luther, a couple of centuries before, and said, prove me wrong based on the Bible. But they couldn't because the Catholic Church was abusing their power at the time, and he was burned at the stake here.
What year?
Shoot. Czech history. Before the 30 Years' War. So I think in the 1500s, early 1600s.
Where did that happen?
In Old Town Square.
Really? Do they have a little memorial there?
Yes. Yes, they do. Yes, the big one. The black statue. That's to Jan-Hus.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah, one thing I wanted to say, what I've reflected on is the danger of labels and how labeling people, anything can impact their identity. It can oversimplify and it creates division. The right... left label, calling people racist or neo-Nazis creates division. It excuses this type of violent behavior. And even when I was speaking to a superior yesterday at school, he was telling me about labels on the kids. And I've had students already this week and they make a mistake. They're like, oh, I'm an idiot. I'm stupid. And I immediately always tell them, no, you're not. You're smart. Because our words have power. And these labels other people put on them or people put on themselves really can impact their identity, how they find value in themselves, and can oversimplify things and create division in larger society.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I'm always saying, why would you ever say I have a terrible memory or I hate Mondays or I hate leg day? Like all that stuff seeps into you. You're hearing it. It's resonating in your mind, whether you realize it or not. So I think the importance of what you say to yourself can't be underestimated.
Mm-hmm. And then a lot of times Christians as well are labeling people based on a sin that they fall into frequently, right? So one person messes up and they're unfaithful in a marriage, that's an adulterer. Or some person struggles with homosexuality, that's a gay. And how this can impact even, you know, talking to people about spiritual things, how labels of sins, things, flaws that we have in our personal life can really impact our outreach.
I needed to hear that. You're an impressive young man. Anything else?
For your first podcast, I'm just passively following you. Nothing else right now. I mean, probably just based on what I'm studying, I'll mention to read listeners in America that inflation, you know, most is likely going to come back. Inflation's pretty apolitical since it's driven by the Federal Reserve's policies. It doesn't matter who's in office, and our debt is unsustainable. And the only way we can pay back our debt is hyperinflating the dollar. So gold and silver, possibly Bitcoin nowadays, debatable, can help you hedge against this inflation and hold your value long term. So that's a little bit of the political economy advice.
Is that something that they talk about in your school?
Oh, no.
What do they talk about?
They were Keynesian. It was terrible. I had a professor talk about lessons from the past, and he agreed with the statement gold is like a barbaric relic of the past. But central banks avoid, it's a small group of people that are setting interest rates that impacts the entire economy. And the U.S. Federal Reserve sets the interest rate of the reserve currency and impacts the entire world. And a lot of countries are turning away from the dollar because of this, but it's really an unfair setup, and it's against free market policies because you're setting a price on capital, which is the most important price for the development of capitalism. You know, you need people to save money so they invest it. So that's one thing that bothered me at LLC. It was most people there were Keynesian. I had a Greek friend who went through the Greek financial crisis, and he was really for gold. But most of them support fiat currencies.
Mm. So do you even learn about other, like Austrian economics or Hayek? I know you said that you hadn't heard of Thomas Sowell, which doesn't surprise me.
I learned all of this really on my own just by, you know, listening to people who were talking about investing in gold and silver, right?
Huh.
But at LLC, I don't even know if we looked at Austrian school, which is really, really sad in a way. I'm trying to make sure I'm accurate with that statement, but I don't remember it. We didn't have these debates, really.
You see what's happening at Oxford recently with the president?
Tell me.
He's talking bad about Charlie Kirk. Really bad.
Wow.
Yeah. And he's not apologizing. He's not backing down.
Well.
All right, dude. Well, I don't have anything else for you. If you have anything for me, let me know now.
How much longer do you think you're going to be traveling around and doing coaching? And do you think you'll ever return permanently to one location and get a job that's more stable?
No. On the latter, no. I don't ever think that I'll have a regular job working for the man. I may start a business. You know that I have neck issues, so I can't do anything like that now, but I could see me doing that. I could see me, I think we'll be traveling the rest of our lives, whether or not it's just a summer and winter thing, I don't know, but it depends on whether we're fruitful and multiply, whether we grow the family.
Yeah.
And I'm not able to do that right now, so we'll see. But good questions. I don't know. I love travel. I love being in Prague. I could be here for 6 months out of the year and be in Krakow, and we just love to be in different places.
Makes sense. And I do want to give a shout out to the young gentleman you had on a couple weeks ago, 26-year-old from Oregon, who started his own real estate company.
Dane Larson. Yeah.
Yep. Hope to meet that guy one day.
Yeah, I think you will. If I'd like to get all you guys to my next retreat. It really was powerful, and you'd really enjoy it and benefit from it. We had the first one in Costa Rica, and that's where we recorded. I'm actually going to start working with his best friend here next week. So yeah. I'm excited about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm excited from the awakening that is coming and is coming in America right now after the death of Kirk, and how people would be bolder returning back to God, in a way, standing up for conservative values, speaking out, and then listening to the speech of his wife, Erica. That was very touching, heart-spiring. Yeah. And one day, you know, it'd be amazing if she forgave, you know, the shooter, like times in history when the missionaries were killed in the Amazon, and the wives of those martyrs went back and witnessed to those tribes and forgave them and told them about Jesus. That would be the, man, that's like the verse, putting coals on someone's head.
Boy, if she could do that, I mean, we witnessed how strong she is. If she could do that, you're right. Woman. That would be the ultimate strength. Before we go, tell me about your timepiece there, your watch, because we talked about that with my last guest. And so I'm just curious what you've got, because I like it.
Just a Timex edition that my father gave me probably like 3 years ago. And so steady working.
Any idea how old that is?
Definitely 5+ years.
Okay. And then maybe you'll pass it to your son someday.
I got to take it off and make sure it doesn't get damaged.
All right, dude. Well, thank you for doing this. This is enjoyable. I knew you. I was like, this young dude is sharp, and I'd like to get him on. So thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thank God we met. I don't know if I can listen to this anytime soon, because it'll be cringe hearing my voice and then all the little errors. But I really, really appreciate this opportunity to speak, share a little bit of my world. And if you want to reach out to me, any listeners, you can shoot me an email at ben.j.rutledge@gmail.com. And Rutledge is spelled RUTLEDGE.
You're good. I didn't even have to ask. Great job, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, please copy the link and share it with a friend. I can be reached on the socials at man_overseas. And we'll talk back at you soon. God bless y'all. Bye-bye.